Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Welcome back to another PT Pearl on the Optimal Body Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Today we are talking about the lymphatic system, what it is, what you need to know about it, because we don't, again, need to get too sciencey about it. But it is important to know and to see how you can maximize it within your own body through just different tools at home.
Yeah, I think the lymphatic system is something that's so important for us to know about and just know that it's actually a thing and that it could be something that's really systemically affecting our whole body. Mm-hmm. And really what the lymphatic system, simply put, it's kind of our garbage system, and it runs along all of our veins and our arteries or our blood vessels in our body. And what it does is it kind of leaches out these toxins throughout and down very at the ends of our fingers and our toes, where our blood vessels are the smallest. That's where we kind of leach out a lot of these toxins before or as it's coming back towards our heart in the venous system. The difficulty with the lymphatic system is it's kind of a passive system, or it's known as what we call more of a passive system. So it doesn't have a lot of active pumping. So sometimes we can get fluid buildup as we're trying to bring all those toxins back to the heart or to the liver or wherever we're going to kind of recycle or clear out some of those toxins and then do that cycle all over again. So if we kind of just imagine this lymphatic system as the garbage system sucking out toxins kind of out of the blood vessels as they are coming back towards the heart to cycle through.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if we think about it, you know, we talk about such a large portion of our body is made up of fluid. And so when we're talking about the lymphatic system, think about it like your fluid pumping through your system. And how can we improve the flow of our fluid so that we improve the health of our bodies? That's really what we're talking about here.
Yeah. And throughout the whole lymphatic system, just like our vessels, as we get closer to the heart, the lymphatic nodules or places that kind of all these fluids are collected through, where they're kind of screened for toxins, get bigger. So just like the vessels, we kind of have the smaller tubules in this lymphatic system, way down at our fingers and our toes and our hands and feet, drawing out that initial fluid and dumping it into bigger systems and flowing it through these lymphatic nodules or these lymphatic nodes, lymph nodes, as it comes back towards the heart. And that's where we kind of screen for toxins to say like, hey, do we need to have any inflammatory processes or any T cells, which is our immune system, come here to fight any of these toxins. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the way that we get toxins out of the blood and then screen it to see if our body needs to do anything to protect our system from getting sick.
And the most common places that we know of these nodules being?
The biggest nodules are really centrally kind of in our hips and our pelvis, kind of up in our armpit area and underneath our clavicle or our collarbone. And that's, again, we have those there because that's right next to these big vessels that dump back into our heart or that go into our liver or whatnot. So this is kind of the command center for the lymphatic system, which is why we're going to talk about some ways to improve it. And some of it's going to focus on, you know, centrally what we can do centrally in our abdomen and our chest that might help some lymphatic issues down in our hands and feet even.
Yeah. And just like, again, why are we talking about the lymphatic system? How does this relate to the physical body? Well, when we get fluids pumping better, not only are you going to help to clear toxins from your body, which who doesn't want that, right? Exactly. You don't have to do a juice cleanse to do that. You can just start these different techniques and tools that we're going to tell you about.
Yeah.
But when we get fluids moving better within the lymphatic system as well, that's going to help, you know, between our fascia. So our fascia is that whole interweaving connected tissue, and between each layer of sort of your fascia, you have fluids. And if we can get our fluids to move better, we're going to get our fascia to slide and glide better. So again, this is why it's so important to systemically look at the body as a whole and not just what is my movement practice, but how are even my fluids moving, so that my movement practice, my mobility, all of that can help to improve.
Yeah. And so what we're going to talk into now is kind of like how this system gets backed up and some of the ways that it does get backed up, but more so focus on the things you can start adding in to improve that flow, right? And so if we kind of think of the lymphatic system as our house, how do we expel waste from our house? Through the toilets, right? And imagine like the house is normally functioning. Every time somebody puts a little bit of garbage in the toilet, it flushes, system's clear, right? Now imagine your system's not working super well and the toilet just doesn't clear every time you flush it, right? And we start building a little bit extra that we don't clear every day as well. And you can imagine in our body, if we're not clearing as much as we're putting in, we might start getting a backup. We might be putting in things that aren't as great. That might start causing some inflammation and might cause more fluid buildup. And so then that's where we're going to dive into these things to kind of seek out some of the things that could be causing a little bit of that fluid buildup and how you can improve that.
Yes. So let's go into number one, which is our favorite. And we're going to like jam you over the head with it over and over again, which is the breath. And, you know, even just talking with someone when we were at a party yesterday, oh, my breath is great. Yes, we're all breathing, right? We're all doing breath. You're here, you're listening, you are great, you're breathing. But how can we maximize our breath to really make sure that we're staying in this more parasympathetic state and not just in this heightened state of fight, flight, freeze, where if we're fight, flight, freeze, everything gets really tense and fluids are not going to flow as well in that state. So even your breath dictates that neurological system of tension and of stagnant fluid. So it is so important to really start to assess that. And we talk about all of this in the breath episode that we did, episode 11. So if you need to go back and actually really start diving into that breath stuff.
Breath's great nervous system wise, and it's also great just for the placement of all those major lymphatic nodes that we mentioned being right underneath, you know, near that pelvic floor in the pelvis, right underneath the diaphragm, near the rib cage, up in the chest, you know, where our rib cage is going to be expanding and contracting. So if we're breathing well, we're again kind of pumping that abdomen and that chest thoracic cavity and in turn pumping those nodules a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's, you know, centralized. So if we clear that out, we're already starting to clear space for more fluid to come from the arms and the legs. Yes. We're kind of backing the cars out of the garage. It's one thing I'll always say, make sure you clear the car at the end of the garage or the end of the driveway first before you back everyone else out, right?
Which we'll talk about when we get into that one.
Yeah. Brushing.
So next one.
So the next one is we're talking about fluids here. So we need to make sure we're drinking fluids and make sure we're drinking good fluids. So we're taking in water specifically every day. And everyone has that 8-cup mark in mind, like, oh, drink 8 cups of water a day. It's slightly different for everybody based on where your body's at and how you process fluids, but water.
Water. Drink more water. And that's something that like was cued to me a long time ago. When you think you're hungry, have you drinking water? And it's, you know, our hunger signals can get a little confusing within our mind based on what we're eating, when we're eating, our sleep cycle, so many different things. But are you drinking enough water? And my now go-to is like, rather than just, oh, how can I mosey over to the fridge and grab some food? But how am I drinking water? So just pour a glass. How do I feel after I have water? So more water, more water. We always are. But I mean, for me especially, I know I need to do this.
Yeah, this is something that can help you eliminate some of the unneeded snacking and stuff if you drink more fluids and make that a conscious thing, or even adding a little flavor into your fluids, whether it's like a little lemon squeeze or something like that, just to help you want to go back and have more of that water.
Or bubbly water.
Yeah, bubbly water. If anything, with maybe a little bit of flavor, that could help you. Again, it's going to maybe help eliminate drinking something else, whether it's coffee or something that might have sugary, you know, additives in there or processed stuff in there, which we're going to talk a little bit about in the next point.
Yes.
But again, water.
Yeah. And another great way. So this brings us to point number three is adding in better foods and good nutrition into our health, which if we're getting in a lot of fruits and veggies, we actually help to get more fluid and water even pulled from those fruits and veggies. So adding in more nutrient dense food. So we know, and veggies and fruits, they've been studied. Okay. If we are eating more of these, then we're decreasing that amount of inflammation within our body. We're improving our fluid intake even by having those within our diet.
Yeah. And I think this is a huge one that adding in good foods is going to help you just as much as the things that those foods are going to replace.
Well, nutrient dense foods.
Yeah, nutrient dense foods.
All foods are good, bad, whatever. Yeah, we can take that out.
Totally. We can make any food a good food.
Yeah.
We're going to add in things that are very nutrient dense, that are whole food based, things that you look at and you recognize what the food is, because if we're doing that, we're probably eliminating some processed stuff. Mm-hmm. And anytime sugars, processed things go in our body that our body doesn't break down as well, there's some component of inflammation happening. There's some component of us maybe retaining more fluids because of all the extra particles and, you know, sugar that's floating around the body. So making sure that we're adding in those good foods, then we're getting a lot more phytochemicals, then we're getting a lot more nutrients from those foods, vitamins that are going to help reduce that inflammation. So it's almost a double whammy to add in some good foods or some nutrient-dense foods.
Nutrient-dense foods. We're working on it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next one, which if you've done any one of my challenges, you'll probably see it. It's bouncing. And this is where we go back to stimulating that fascial tissue and getting things to relax so you can actually start to activate the muscles you want to, improve the mobility that you want to, release the tension in that tissue. Bouncing, it's that first line of support to kind of help to move those fluids around. And this means like, it doesn't have to mean like you're jumping. It just means you're on your toes and you're bouncing on your heels and you're literally letting your body just relax. So a lot of people don't like to do this too, especially in crowds or groups of people, because things are going to jiggle. Let them jiggle. Let them loose. I don't think we spend enough time like actually allowing our body to just shake out. And when we do that, we can really help to release that restriction and get those fluids pumping.
Yeah, it's just an amazing way to warm up the body in the morning before you work out, whatever it may be. Bouncing, it's a quick way to just get the fluids moving a little bit and kind of maybe take a little bit of that tension out of the body. I find when I let myself jiggle, that's when my body just kind of lets go of some of that tension that I may not know that I'm holding during the day.
Exactly. So. And that's why a lot of people like to buy those little rebounders, which are great. But again, you could just bounce on your heels.
Yeah. Next point is neural lymphatic points.
Yes.
Right. And so this is, I mean, big word, but all it means is the lymphatic system that we're talking about and the nervous system that Jen and I talk about so much. There's points where those kind of cross, mm-hmm. right? And if we've taught anything in all of the PT pearls we've done, we need to talk to the nervous system, right? And so where the lymphatic system and nervous system are crossing, if we try talking right to those points, then we might stimulate some activity in that lymphatic system a little bit more.
Yeah. And this was really like, shout out to IKN, Integrated Kinetic Neurology.
Yes.
My friends there, I took one of their courses and they really helped to kind of highlight this and show how it can be so effective. In getting your body to relax, getting that tension, getting the fluids moving. And so this means that we're not going to be like really pushing in. We're not breaking up scar tissue. We're just talking, as Dom said. So this is if we find our belly button and our hip bone, and then we go and we kind of make a diagonal line between the two. And this is where like, so just finding these points and it feels like almost like a hip flexor release. So don't dig too hard. It's better to like lay down so that, because right now my core is supporting me to sit up strong. So mm-hmm. I can't really like get into anything as much. But if you can lay down and relax and kind of just dig your fingers just nice and gently. So it's not, again, a dig. It's like, okay, I feel the pressure. Now I'm going to do my breath work that we talked about and breathe and relax into it. It's just 30 seconds. Next area, right on top of the sternum. And you kind of get your knuckles and you just are going to start to wiggle your knuckles and kind of almost scraping that sternum area. And you find the places that feel a little bit more like, ooh, I feel that, you know, mm-hmm. again, not trying to like create pain or anything. You're just feeling it and you're breathing into it. Okay. Another area. So yeah, we can go underneath the rib cage. Underneath mm-hmm. the rib cage is a really good area. So getting those fingers, I love this one. You should be able to get your fingers up and under the rib cage. And we've talked about this before as well. So important. So this is one, again, relax, breathe, 30 seconds in each area. Last one I like to talk about is right underneath the clavicle or the collarbones. And again, just getting your fingers, trying to kind of go up and under those collarbones. And you'll notice, oh, there's a lot of tension there. Like, oh, I feel tight. And yeah, you might be tight in your pec area, but it also is like an area of where that nervous that those nerves and the lymphatic tissue kind of cross. And so that's why you feel a little bit more tension. But again, spending time in there, 30 seconds in each place, breathing, it can help to start to move things along.
And kind of going to our principles of how we talk about all manual therapy, it is. It's a little communication to the nervous system in that area to maybe give us a little more space to let that lymphatic node or the lymphatic vessels in that area work a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that might just last for a little bit. You know, we might feel better for that night or waking up in that morning. But if done consistently, along with some of these other things, you might make a long-term change.
And then another one is dry brushing. And mm-hmm. I've shown a video on this both on Instagram and on YouTube. So we'll link it up. So you can look at that in a little bit more detail. So in general, it's really light brushing. The type of brush you can get, whatever's on Amazon, there's not like, it's just dry bristles and it's just like light to moderate pressure along the leg. And again, where did we talk about how the lymphatic system pulls? It's from the feet all the way up to the heart. So every motion that we're doing, so we go from the leg, usually right, and then left, right arm to left arm, and we're always going toward the heart. So it's just brushing up toward the heart. Stomach, some people go in like a circular direction as far as their digestive system, so up and down, so up the right, down the left, and you can go that way, or you could go up toward the heart again, around the chest, like kind of making circular motions mm-hmm. in the armpits is nice. Again, there's a lot of the nodules there, up the back, up the bum, even down the chest, down the neck toward the heart. So everything toward the heart. And then Dom likes to do like the backing out.
Yeah, just the whole, hey, we got to back whatever's closest to the end of the driveway first. So I like to start around my chest and around my heart and around my armpits and around my hips, right? So doing all that stuff around my chest and my abdomen and my hips first.
So moving that toward the heart first. Yeah,
moving that towards the heart first. And then I'll go into one of my legs and do my thigh up towards the heart. And then do my lower leg and thigh up towards the heart. And then do foot all the way up. And then go to the next leg, same thing, thigh to the lower leg to the foot. Then the arm, upper arm, lower arm to the hand, the other arm. And then you can really just go over everything once again. Mm-hmm. And that's a good way to, I don't know, make sure that you're not trying to push fluids that are in your feet before you've cleared out stuff that might be in your legs or in your abdomen.
And I think that's a great way to really focus on it, do it. And even if you just were to take your hand and kind of cup your thumb and your pointer finger and just kind of move it up toward the heart, even on the arm, on the leg. Like you can, you again, it's not a specific thing. It's just light to moderate pressure and it's up toward the heart. And you can do that with your hand. You can do it with a brush. The good thing about the brush is that it's going to kind of help to clear dead tissue, skin as well. So you can kind of do, like we do it before we shower. All the clothes are off. You just get that right into the shower. And then you bathe right after. So
yeah, it's a good absolutely. Way to do it. No, and I undoubtedly, when I'm doing dry brushing, everyone loves to hate on dry brushing, but undoubtedly, whenever I'm doing it, I feel better and I feel
too.
Clearer and I feel like my joints aren't as puffy. Yes. I don't wake up in the morning, feel like I haven't cleared all the crap out of my hands and feet.
Especially and so when like, I do it on my face too.
Yeah.
Oh, it feels so good. There's like a little brush that you can use on your face or you can use the Gua Sha. It's the same thing.
So a lot of people love to say, oh, where's the research? What? It's just like, hey, I feel good when I do it. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So try it out. And then the last one, point number 7, move. Move your body. If you move your body, you're going to move your fluids.
Exactly. Movement daily. And this doesn't have to mean like a big hard workout, but you're going to get up and you're going to walk daily. You're going to move your body. You're going to take the stairs more than the elevator. You're just going to move. When we move, we help to pump things. We move fluids. We get things rocking and rolling in our body and you feel so much better.
Yeah, both our veins and our lymphatic system that pull things back towards our heart are more what we call passive systems. I think I mentioned at the beginning. So we need a little bit of this pumping of the muscles around it to help get that lymphatic and venous fluid out of our legs mostly because we're having our legs down in this dependent position all day. Mm-hmm. So if we're sitting all day and we're not pumping those muscles, we're just asking for the fluid to build up in our feet, right? So if you sit at a desk for long periods of work every half hour, every hour. Make sure you get up, walk around your building once, walk around your office once for a couple minutes, lay on the floor and get those feet up in the air and just pump your ankles around for a minute, right? That little bit of movement, if done throughout the day at intervals, could prevent you from feeling like you have swollen ankles and feet at the end
totally.
Of the day.
I think that was like one of my girlfriends texted me. She's in nursing school and she said that was like one of their questions is like, the answer was if you're sitting at a desk all day long, make sure that you're pumping, you're kicking off your shoes and you're pumping your feet at least minimum.
Yeah. I mean, along with other things. And in our opinion, we should be moving a little bit more than that throughout the day. But again, bare minimum, you should be able to give your body a couple minutes to be conscious and move every half an hour or hour.
Yeah.
And that can do wonders for your lymphatic system.
And honestly, why again do we talk about this? I literally program this into my prescriptions as a physical therapist for some of my clients, and they've had major, major changes in actually being able to achieve the mobility that they want in their body, free up pain, and get things moving and feeling better. So truly try it out. See what it feels like.
All right. So talking about getting things flowing, the best time to get things flowing and to get your lymphatic system moving is in the morning. So you can do some of the things we're talking about. And then you can also get into your strong coffee to have that strong morning. Strong coffee, you probably heard Jen and I talk about it. It's one of our favorite ways to start the morning with a coffee drink that is going to keep our mind sharp, that is going to give us amazing nutrients, amazing collagen, MCTs that are going to keep our body replenished and not clog down our lymphatic system. So if you go to the link in the show notes, click it, use code OPTIMAL15 to get yourself 15% off your order of strong coffee and keep bouncing into a strong morning.
All right. Next up on the podcast, I'm excited. We have a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition and dietetics from Westchester, New York. She is Toni Marinucci. I love her last name. It took me a while to get to know, but she is a business owner of Diet Tips with Toni, which you can find Tips with Toni on Instagram or her website, Tips with Toni. And she provides online nutritional coaching. She works with busy working women who struggle knowing how to eat to fuel their bodies optimally so that they can have energy and self-confidence to live a life of freedom, freedom from negative thoughts, self-doubt, and what ifs. She uses her social media platforms to end the restrictive diet culture by providing simple strategies to help people commit to healthier living with scientific-based evidence and real-world application. She just recently gave a TED Talk, and she is actually writing her first book, which she's going to dive in a little bit on the parallels between dieting, dating, and romantic relationships. So we get really in depth with all of this. She gives so many tools and strategies, and I'm excited for you guys to get to know her. Welcome to the show, Toni. I am so incredibly excited to have you here with us. And I know that you talk about food in such a different way and you explore it for more of that emotional background. Now, my question for you, first off, as we dive right in, is really just how did you get on this food journey to even become interested in becoming a registered dietitian?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here. I'm grateful to have the ability to be on your platform to share with your listeners. I told you this online, but I needed to be on the record. Like, what you do is really, really inspiring and really motivating, and it's really refreshing to have a clinician represent their field really well. So thank you for that. And thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. It's not unnecessary. It's about you. Right now.
It's really, really great. I'll ask you this later, but I think I want to have you on my podcast. No pressure.
Definitely. I'm in.
As a recording, but I think you'd be an awesome guest on mine as well. All that to say that I became a registered dietitian because I struggled with my weight growing up. And I had this tied belief that my weight determined my worth. And I don't think that's unique, unfortunately, particularly in women and men too. But I know a lot of people, even my clients currently, before they start working with me, they'll express that. They just don't feel worthy of love or worthy of that promotion or capable or confident, all because of a number on the scale. And I learned, really quickly that can't be the way that we go about and live our life. And so fortunately, I went towards that lesson, as a teenager, recognizing I can't put all this pressure on myself to lose all of this weight, because as I was trying to lose weight, I was doing it very, very restrictive eating. I had very restrictive eating habits, would then led to overeating, which then led to excessive exercise. And it was just like a really, really vicious cycle. And so I realized, like, at that one point, like, what, even if that was effective or not, so say I did lose weight, I was so unhappy and miserable. Like, I just knew that that couldn't be the way. So I decided to go to school to become a registered dietitian because I really wanted to teach myself. Honestly, it was like more for my personal reasons, but then finding out that as I started to look at food as fuel rather than the enemy and learning how to kind of choose healthy options with a balance of maybe some less healthy things, I really started to feel more confident, not only in my food choices, but within myself. And I just started, I fell in love with the profession. I fell in love with the field of nutrition. And I wanted to obviously share that with others. So that's what I do now. I really help people find I really share with people how they teach them, how they can find that unique approach. Because as you know, like, everyone's so different and you could have two of the same problems, but the way in which you solve that problem can be very different based off of your age, your gender, your activity level, your culture, your likes, your dislikes, all those things. So I really help people to recognize that they are unique and they are worth it and they are worthy. And it starts as simple as just changing your eating habits, and then all the other work becomes pretty easy from there.
Oh my goodness. Before Dom hops in, I just have to say, like, I really appreciate the approach and the journey that you're taking with clients, because this is the message. That is exactly, you know, how I kind of approach the body and telling people that they're unique. They get to be treated uniquely. You know, there's no one size fits all. So I have to say that I appreciate that message.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's important. And as you know, it's not just with nutrition. It's so many things. And it's relationships. It's, you know, if you have an injury, healing your body, like, there's just so many reasons why, like, although we have some very general, you know, recommendations, at the end of the day, you are your own person. And so the path in which you get there is going to look different.
I love also hearing you talk about food as fuel. And a lot of the language and stuff that you use talks about food as just being this foundational piece of our health and who we are. And of course, how much you talk about mindset when it comes to food. Can you talk just a little bit about food as a foundational pillar of our health, and then how you start to use people's mindset and connection with that food to bring them back to maybe optimizing the way they use it in their life?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, think about it, like, what you eat dictates how you feel, and how you feel dictates what you do. So I always tell people, I help people do what they want to do. Because if you don't feel good every day, then you're not going to be your best every day. And then that's going to cycle into how quickly, or if you ever kind of reach whatever aspirational goals that you have in life. So that's like the big theme of it. But the small, like, kind of micro view is really just like, how many times have you heard, I'm going to go all in, I'm going to restrict all of these foods, I'm not going to eat any sugar, I'm not going to have any fried foods, I'm not going to, you know, go drinking with my friends, like, and they completely just isolate themselves and, you know, just eat chicken and veggies most of their life. Not most of their life, they'll do that for like a couple weeks. But then obviously they quickly fall off that, and then it goes back off to like, well, it was too hard, I'll start again on Monday, which turns into next Monday, which turns into next month, which turns into after the holidays, which, you know, that whole thing. And it's just like a constant cycle of going all in and all out. And I think that's a metaphor for life, because if anything, and like, we know that the way to progress is to just take bite-sized pieces, doing like, working on like the little things and habitually doing it. Just before we started recording, I was listening to your newest episode about back pain, because I actually have back pain. And you made a really great point. And you were just saying, like, you know, you can't do a physical therapy exercise for a week or so and expect that the 50 years in which you've been experiencing this pain or weight gain or whatever it is to just go away in a couple of weeks. Like, we are what we repeatedly do. And so therefore, with your nutrition being the foundational component of, you know, eating really well, will make you feel good. But the second you stop eating well and doing that repeatedly over time, it's just not, you're not going to feel good. So that's kind of where I see a lot of people handling their nutrition, is that all or nothing, which is usually also in other aspects of how they're handling their life. And I think that in life and anything, where it's just really, it's all about balance. It's really all finding about, like, what can we do consistently, knowing it's not going to be perfect, but knowing that if we're kind of here, it's better than kind of being all in and all out.
I 100% agree. And The hard thing, though, is that it's really hard for people to wrap their head around, well, what is balance? And how do I know when I'm keeping it consistent? So are there some strategies that you can just kind of start to help people with in terms of how do I create this balance and what does that look like for me?
Yeah, so you're very right. It is so different for everyone. And you can also flip it where someone will say, oh, it's okay, everything in moderation. But that really only works if you define moderation. Because the term moderation, you know, for you can look different for me. And that's where we really do need to be clear on kind of what it is that is balanced for you. And it takes time to get there. And I think that goes back to, you know, wanting things right away and not being patient. But if you go in with something, recognizing, I tell people to like, treat your eating habits like an experiment. Be very, very observant. Notice how you feel. Notice how your energy levels are. Are you having normal bowel movements? Are you feeling bloated? Are you feeling fatigue? You know, are you irritable? Are you hangry? Are you overly stuffing yourself? You know, maybe you're really, quote unquote, really good Monday through Friday, and then the weekends become a free-for-all. And I challenge, it's like your version of good is probably too restrictive. And so therefore, we need to take a look at that. And maybe you're not eating enough during the week, or maybe you just don't have a plan. So all that to say that it really comes down to that individual. But one sentence that I share that I think is really, really helpful for everyone. So it's like, if you've never worked with me one-on-one, if you never take a course, you can listen to all my podcasts. But if you just take this one sentence with you, I think that you'll actually find that balance in your eating habits, which is focusing on how food is going to make you feel versus focusing on how food is going to make you look. So growing up, I'll explain that a little in greater detail, but basically the basic concept is I was so focused on just losing weight and focusing on only eating food or not eating food to look a certain way, but forgetting that I was feeling miserable, I was feeling tired. And then obviously even that overeating makes you feel really sluggish and not so great. But if you take that mindset of focusing on how you want to feel versus on how you want to look, you know, you want to feel energized, you want to feel in confident and in control of your food choices. And so we know that that doesn't mean you can't have a cheeseburger and french fries, right? That's not it. But it's like, if you have the cheeseburger, the french fries, and the milkshake, and you and the drinks or whatever it is, and you do that every day, like that's not going to feel good. Right. So it's learning that I can have the cheeseburger and the french fries, but maybe I should also have like a side salad or some veggies, because it is because I feel really good when I have that balance there. And that's where it becomes unique to everyone. But that's kind of like the one thing I try to get people to recognize is when you focus on how you want to feel versus on how you want to look, you can start to develop and find that balance in your eating habits.
I think you covered just like a super foundational thing for me with food. Like you said, things can just get so restrictive and you can feel like, oh, mm-hmm. I can't have this. And we start forming these things in our head that are good and bad with food. Yeah. And that's something that I always try to steer people away from. Like, there's no good and bad things. It's just like how we feel about doing it. So I love what you talk about having those days of allowance, but just making sure you know how often you can do that for you, you know, and what works best with your body, and having a little bit more of that intuition, but focusing on how it feels, not based on what it's going to look like or any of those end term things. But another thing that's really tough, so those are kind of like the qualitative things, like, oh, this is how we feel, you know, in eating a certain way. How, because I know food tracking can be good and be foundational and be a good practice to do at least for a portion of time. How do you approach that with somebody? Because that can, you know, really quantitatively help somebody track what they've been eating.
Yeah. So that answer is going to be different for everyone, as you know. Like, so tracking, yes, very helpful, because I believe when you can track it, you can change it. So you have this tracking, it brings awareness, you're able to see kind of what works and what doesn't. At the same time, some people have only tracked, so they only look at calories, or they only track points, or they only, like, they're nervous to eat anything outside that doesn't fit their macros, right? So you have to know yourself best. And what I always tell people is, if tracking is stressing you out more so than helping you, then it's probably not an effective method. At the same time, you do want to be able to bring awareness. So there's many ways of tracking. And I actually have a course, it's called the Healthy Living Foundations course. And that's one module in the 8 where we go deeper into like the many ways to track. So just give you an example of how, if you have a healthy relationship with food and you understand what a carb is, what a protein is, what a fat is, what a calorie is, and like what your individual needs are, and you feel like you can track on MyFitnessPal and or, you know, any app for that matter that gives you that data and it's helpful for you rather than hurtful for you and it doesn't stress you out, then I think that's great. But if you that tends to make you a little bit more anxious around food and leads to what maybe like emotional eating, which a lot of my clients that I work with struggle with emotional eating. And that's like kind of my main kind of where I want to get people away from. You can track, you don't have to track. Cause I want people to become more in touch with like their hunger cues and stuff like that. I do have my clients track who have that history of maybe too much tracking, too much counting. But what they do is they usually just take photos of their food. So that way they don't have to get into the quantitative numbers and make it feel like it's, stressing them, but they'll just take a photo of their food, upload it into the app. I'll take a look at it and we'll be able to at least see portions. We can see colors. We can see how frequently they're eating. And they're also able to add things on there, like if they felt like this was a healthy food or a less healthy food, if they were hungry or not hungry or somewhat hungry. And they can also comment things like, was feeling really anxious and that's why I ate. And so therefore, there's many ways to track and it's going to be different for everyone. But I will say if you kind of fall closer to that emotional eater or have a history of disordered eating and excessive tracking, you probably want to go more toward like a diary entry, no numbers. But if you feel like you have a healthy relationship with food and you're really just trying to get to the next level, maybe you've lost some weight, but you're trying to now lose a little bit more, but the scale doesn't seem to be moving and you haven't implemented tracking yet, then maybe using an app like MyFitnessPal or something like that would be effective.
Yeah, that is so great because I think people need to understand that it doesn't have to be about the numbers. Like people ask me all the time and I'm like, I've never counted calories. They're like, what do you eat? How many calories? I'm like, I don't know. I'm blessed, I must say, that I haven't had to deal with a lot of emotional eating. Like I will say that I don't eat sometimes if I'm super stressed, or I will probably overeat when I'm super stressed. So I do draw a line up to those balances, but I'm fortunate enough to have never really crossed that line and gone into that in a way that's unhealthy for my diet. Now, I know that plays such a big role and sometimes we don't know when we're crossing that line. Like, how do I know when I'm really just wanting to be mindful and track calories versus now I'm doing it out of a place that's a shameful place for my body, or I'm beating myself up, or I'm getting comments that I don't like the way I look, or how do I know when I'm emotional eating or I'm doing it because I just want to lose weight?
Right. Yeah. So I will just go comment firstly on that point where you were like, I don't really emotional eat, or I don't think it's unhealthy for me. And I think that's really important to highlight that emotional eating isn't good or bad. And it's human nature for us to all do it. It only becomes a problem when it is happening repeatedly. And then you have that associated guilt or the what I call the screw it mentality. So what I mean by that is like, if you're tracking and you're like, oh, this isn't working, or oh, I'm anxious and I can't eat this food. And so you're just like, I don't care. And then you just go for it and you just take anything and everything that you can find. So that's where we can identify that probably isn't the healthiest. That's not a really healthy eating behavior. And it really comes down to how frequently you're doing it, the volume in which you're doing it. But I would say more importantly that feeling of guilt that is so commonly associated after eating, that's not really I don't like to use the word supposed to, but in the sense of like, unfortunately that has become very normal when we could argue like that's not healthy, I guess that would be the right term to use. So I think once again, it's really how you're feeling behind it. But then also too, if you have this goal for weight loss and now you keep self-sabotaging by rummaging the cabinets or, someone's own definition of being off track, it's like, how frequently is that happening? And are you not hitting your goal? So obviously the plan in place needs to then be changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. And I like that. Well, first of all, congratulations. You're writing your book right now, right?
Thank you. Yeah, it's really hard.
I get it.
Nobody talks about about that. Writing a book is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. So I commend you for that. Now, I know that you talk a lot about comparing dieting with relationships, particularly romantic relationships. And again, I think this goes into, you know, kind of what we were talking about with emotional eating. How do the two compare?
Yeah. So this, I want to just give like kind of like a back end story a little bit. So the book started actually because I decided I was going to do a TED Talk, which I just recently gave back in February. And hopefully you'll be able to see it soon on YouTube. But basically the TED Talk was just that premise of making the connections between dieting, dating, and relationships, because I'm very honest and upfront and vulnerable about all of my challenges with weight loss, my challenges, you know, as a dietitian, but also my challenges in my personal life. And so I share that, you know, when it comes to nutrition, like I learned that lesson really early on and I was able to learn from my mistakes, but I can't say that with dating. So I use this analogy, I say it in the talk, but it's kind of true and funny at the same time. It's that I dated five versions of the same guy, just with a different name and a different face. And I see people doing that with dieting. So they'll go from one diet to another diet to another diet, and they appear different, you know, but at the underlying, the same, there's a lot of similarities, which is like that restriction, or being told and not taught, you know, that sort of a thing. So I use that to say that that's kind of just the basis. But the why I decided to write the book off the top of that is because as I was writing, trying to decide what I wanted to share in the TED Talk, I realized there were so many layers, like so many layers, and that I could take this in so many ways. So kind of going back to whether you're like on a diet or off a diet, it's like, it's okay to date around. Like, we've been told to like that we have to be either committed or not committed. And I actually think that if people approach dieting differently, rather than feeling like the diet was going to be the end all be all, and it's like either that, it's like either you're getting married to this man or you're, or, you know, it's not going to work. And so rather than looking at it as like, this is it, like, this is the one I'm going to marry, we have to look at dieting as like, let me try this out. Like, let me see how this works. And if it doesn't work, I can't be disappointed because chances are I learned something in there, right? So a lot of these low carbohydrate diets that are based off of low carb, you know, we know that there's usually some foundational components. There's usually caloric restriction, which yields in weight loss. Caloric deficit, which is what you need to, in order to lose weight. Although we know it's a little bit more extreme than necessary. But then also too, it's like, do you think that someone lost weight from cutting out, you know, bread, pasta, and even things like sweet potatoes, like an oatmeal and quinoa? Or do we think it's probably because they stopped adding sugar to their coffee and they limited, you know, how often they had ice cream at night, you know? So it's like being able to take that apart and realize like the whole diet as a whole wasn't bad, just like the whole relationship, if you were with someone for a few months or even a few years and it didn't end well, that doesn't mean that the whole entire thing was absolutely terrible, unless you're so desperate to find the answer that you're ignoring the signs. So that's kind of like where I talk a little bit about when I went to college to become a registered dietitian, the first diet, and it's not even a diet, it was what I called a lifestyle at the time, was vegetarianism. And so I became a vegetarian. And at first it was really great. I had a lot of energy. I felt really good. But I was really bloated and always tired and really hungry at some point. So at first it was good, but at one point it was just no longer good for me. And I, instead of recognizing that, because I had already committed to my family and my friends that I was a vegetarian, and they finally got around to recognizing like, they weren't going to, you know, they're going to have like a veggie burger for me when I came over. I like felt like I couldn't get out of it. But even though it wasn't really there for me. And at the same time, I was also dating a man who was really great for me. But at a certain point, like that was my very first boyfriend. That was my very first committed serious relationship. And he just wasn't for me anymore. It didn't make him a bad guy. He just wasn't someone that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And that's okay. And I think that's the beginning of the conversation of what, you know, the many different ways we can talk about. I compare the correlations between dieting, dating, and romantic relationships. But that's just like a sneak peek to the TED Talk, to the book, and how much more we can explore.
That's fantastic how you relate the diets into the relationships. And I think that that's kind of a problem that we have in health in general. Jen and I always talk about how with people's pain or people's movement issues, they're always just looking for that fix. You know, they're looking for that one, you know, catch-all, okay, I do this and my pain goes away. And that's not really how it works for rehabbing your body movement-wise. And I'm realizing that's not really how it works for food and diet. There's not just that one catch-all that's going to be like, great, this is perfect, and it's going to work for me for the rest of my life. And
right. Well, our bodies are changing every day, too. So, yeah. So, even when you find something that works, there's something might not work then, you know, in 5 years from now. And that's okay.
Especially for women who, you know, go through pregnancy and other things with menopause and how that changes diet and how our body responds to certain foods. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Our moods and hormones shifts. And then also, too, just straight body acceptance. Like at a certain point, like our metabolisms do slow down as we age and as we get older, but also like our lifestyle changes. And so maybe if you're a single woman and, you know, this is pre-marriage, pre-babies, like maybe getting to a certain goal weight is realistic because maybe you aren't dependent on cooking for other people, or you're not, you know, maybe you're socializing, but you're not like, you don't need to go to like this barbecue and this communion and this christening and this wedding, you know, it's just a different lifestyle. And so although your body might even be capable of getting to like your pre-pregnancy weight, maybe you start to recognize that the amount of effort that you have to put in to keep that going is not 100% worth it. And so therefore you recognize like that means that maybe, you know, I'm still putting in effort and I'm still trying, but maybe I just change kind of where I'm expecting my weight to go. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that sometimes people will see me. So I played football in college and people will just see me post college, or they hadn't seen me since college. And they're just like, wow, you've been losing a lot of weight. And it's like, well, no, I'm not training in the way that my body's finding it necessary to keep all that weight around. And so I find that my weight and body adapt the most based on how I'm fueling it. But then just the general movement throughout the day, and your body really just falls into those grooves. So I think you kind of covered that there's not one best diet for everybody, or for even for one person across their whole life. It's kind of this continually changing thing. One thing that we always have people ask are just the common like diet myths. Do you have any that like come to mind? Like, oh, these are just like myths that always come up, like keto is the best, or everyone should go carnivore, or things like that, that you want to dispel for everybody right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, the most obvious I would say is like carbs are the devil. Like just people are just so afraid of carbohydrates. And it's just so sad because especially like most carbs, especially if you choose the right types, are just amazing mood boosters, amazing for energy. And then also too, very often if you find yourself feeling kind of unsatisfied after the meal or like still hungry, it's maybe because you just missed that little bit of carbohydrate that would have nicely balanced out that meal.
What are some of the carbs that you recommend?
I always tell people, it's not that carbs are the problem. It's just that most people are not choosing the right types of carbohydrates most often. And actually, when you neglect in choosing more like starchy vegetables or, you know, whole grain carbs, you end up craving those things like sweets and sugar, refined carbohydrates more. So I usually recommend like, you know, definitely anything that has like whole grains or starches. So therefore, there's more dietary fiber. So it actually keeps you fuller for longer. And it also can prevent things like high cholesterol and help manage blood sugars. So very often those will be things like oatmeal, quinoa, even if you like pasta, doing like a chickpea or lentil based pasta, because it'll have more fiber and more protein. Starchy vegetables like sweet potato, even regular potatoes, as long as you keep the skin's going to have a lot of that fiber. Butternut squashes, like all your winter squashes, like butternut, acorn squash. Those tend to be really, really awesome carbohydrate fuel sources that are not only going to provide your body with lots of nutrients, but they are also filling. So I usually use the example of like, there's nothing wrong with bread, but if you think about like when you go to a restaurant and they put the bread basket on the table, it's usually refined. So it's made with white flour and they stripped it of that dietary fiber. So although it tastes really good and there is a place to eat for pleasure solely, and it doesn't always have to be nutritious, we know that if we overdo it on that bread basket, we could eat, not really feel full. Or if we do feel full, we're hungry again an hour later. And that's because there's no fiber in that bread, versus if you change that bread to something that was more fiber rich, it'd be difficult to keep eating it. Your body would probably tell you, I'm full. Beforehand. So even if the calories are slightly different, the fiber is what's actually going to make or break the amount of calories you consume throughout the total day.
So good. I mean, I think this is so helpful. Like, those are like exact tips and takeaways that people can utilize right now to start to understand the difference between, you know, being afraid of carbs and actually fueling your body with carbs that are going to just keep you satiated and happy and energized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say, I didn't mention fruit. I would say fruit is bunched in that with the carbs that are bad for us. And so it's so funny to me because this is really common and I don't understand it, but one thing is real. And I know I'm not like laughing at anyone. I'm just like laughing at the fact that I want to understand the logic, but I still can't, which is, people will say fruit has a lot of sugar and so therefore they won't eat fruit, but yet they'll do things like juice cleanses, which is like taking the fruit in its whole form, getting rid of all of that fiber and just drinking the sugar, and it's usually not balanced, and then that's easily to overdo it in those states. And so that's another prime example of it's not one thing is good or bad, and fruit itself is very nutrient dense. It's often best actually in the whole form, unless you have digestive issues with like a crazy like diarrhea or lots of bloating, and sometimes it can bother your stomach more, but most of the time you're going to feel a lot more full if you eat an orange versus drinking orange juice.
Totally. I remember even when I did a juice cleanse and I wanted to kill everyone.
When I'm done, it's not filling.
No, I literally was like the worst person to be around at work. versus when I did, you know, when I just become more mindful of what I'm taking in, read labels, understand the ingredients, understand the nutrients, and understand what it is doing for my body. I mean, it makes the world of a difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I like what you said there, the reading the labels, the educating yourself, recognizing how your body feels when you eat it. Those are key things that I hope everyone can take away from this podcast today, is that as much as I would love to just tell you exactly what to do and hope that you did it, realistically, that's so not going to work. you have to be able to be open to that exploration process and to learning what works best for you. I'm happy to give you guidance, to give you a little structure, a little bit routine, and, you know, guidance for sure. But I can't be like, do this, don't do that.
Yeah.
So, Toni, thank you so much for being on today. Like you guys said, this has just been a little masterclass in starting to be able to pick through some of these things and some of these myths and ways to optimize the way that you're eating in your kitchen. I know you have so much other information out there. You mentioned a course you had called the Healthy Living Foundations course, and also people can find you at Tips with Toni, I believe.
Yeah, Tips with Toni. That's Toni with an I. Tipswithtoni.com. People can learn more about my course. The Healthy Living Foundations course is really a great way to kind of get out of that all or nothing mindset and really learn food for what they are, not for the points, not for the calories. Like, we go through in every module, it's like an in-depth experience and learning experience of basic nutrition to eating while socializing to, it's like, there's just a lot. It's a lot, but it's necessary because if you don't spend, it's only 4 weeks. But in those 4 weeks, if you don't spend that time to really learn, then you'll spend your whole lifetime trying to figure it out. And it's like, just take those 4 weeks, take the course, figure out, you know, just learn for what it is, you know, learn food for what it actually is versus what the media says that it is. And then learn to explore and take that process with you through life. And you'll save a lot of time and energy in the long run.
Definitely. I mean, if we could just learn the tools to empower us to take control back into our health, back into our own hands. That's what Dom and I talk about all the time on this podcast. And I love that you're really bringing people the foundation so that they could build for themselves as well. So that's so beautiful.
So thank you. Thank you guys again for having me. I really appreciate the platform and the opportunity.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for being on. And we're so excited to check out your book when it comes out and your TED Talk.
You.
And hopefully by the time that we actually release the podcast, people will actually be able to go into the show notes and check out your link to the TED Talk as well. So I'm excited to watch it myself. I hope everyone goes and checks it out. And again, it's tips_with_Toni on Instagram. Go check her out. Go give her a follow and check out everything she has to offer.
Awesome. Thank you guys.
Thank you so much for listening to us on the Optimal Body Podcast, where we're going to continue to bring you the PT pearls and guests that will help you find your optimal body. Now, head over to wherever you listen to this and leave us an honest review, and head to docgenfit.com/podcast, where you can find all the show notes.
Don't forget that we're going to give away a free month to someone who subscribes, leaves us an awesome review, and lets us know what they want to review on the next PT Pearl. So we'll be choosing that once a week to get into a free month of the Optimal Body membership.